personal note delivered to us.
Let the record show that the five people showed up. See, Harris, Lewis, Sailors, Freeman, and Ferguson. The others were absent. We can, of course, understand, and I think certainly excuse the free conference committee. Those who were not on it should be here. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Accept my apologies for
your apologies.
We'll adjourn the meeting, and then
to the call of the chair.
Pardon?
To the call of the chair.
Yeah, to the call of the chair, and then Oral, I want to say a word to you about this LT4. I just mentioned it to Bud and Jeff. That thing, was voted on. People who have turned in their names would like to testify. One is Mrs. Munoz. Is that the way you say it? Oh. Okay. Yes. All right. You want to take a seat up here close to the tape recorder? And
is that okay?
Yep, take
it. My name is Ree Munoz, and I've worked at the museum for 4 years. I quit last November. The first 2.5 years that I was at the museum, I worked under the directorship of Jane Wallen. I'd like to talk about museum security. During this period that I worked at the museum, there were essentially two standards of security. The first one, by Mrs. Wallen, was a very high standard. And after she resigned, that standard was relaxed to a certain extent. Mrs. Wallen continuously stressed the importance of museum security. She repeated again and again the importance of keeping the doors locked. She repeated again and again that the staff members would work to be the last ones to leave the museum at night, and that under no circumstances were contract workers or part-time workers or youth corps people or volunteer workers to remain after the permanent staff had left. The only exception to this was the girl who opened the museum at night during the summer months and who worked on the weekends, and she only had a key, or the necessary keys to open the museum. She did not have keys to other areas of the museum. Two very important areas for security in the museum are the basement area as well as the second floor area. And the second floor area, where I'm speaking of the office area on the second floor. There are offices up there, and in these offices, there are periodically paintings stashed. Sometimes there are a few artifacts up there for one reason or another. There are tape recorders may be found up there, a camera, and of course, all other office equipment. So it's very important that these doors be kept locked in this area when no one is around, especially since this is the visitors' area, as you see. There is a fire escape or emergency exit down this staircase, and this is a door that cannot be locked. So a visitor up here can always walk through this door and then into this office area. And if no one is here and these doors are not locked, people can get in there. So this was a very important area to keep locked when no one is there. The museum and basement is also an area not meant for visitors. Not meant for visitors. It's a closed area. In the basement, there's the collection room where all the artifacts are kept that are not on display And I don't know how many artifacts there might be down there. I would guess certainly 2,000, large and small. These doors are always kept locked. The traveling school exhibit areas, two rooms here, and the carpentry workshop very often have artifacts in them because these people who work in the traveling school exhibits need the artifacts. The traveling school exhibits consist of boxes that are sent out to the bush area for the schools where these children do not have access to museums, and they very often have artifacts in these boxes. These boxes are designed and made up in this area, and therefore there are artifacts lying around in this area, maybe for a day, maybe for 1 or 2 or 3 weeks. And these artifacts are not returned to the collection room at the end of the day. They are left there, and actually it's fairly safe to leave them there because this area is locked at night and is not open to visitors. So these are two very important areas for security reasons. When Mrs. Wallen was the director of the museum, there were 3 keys in constant use for the collection room. One of these keys was in the possession of Pete Corey, who was the curator of the collection. The other one was in the possession of Effie Kimball, who was his assistant down there. And the third one was used by me. But subsequently, traveling school exhibit members regularly and frequently have come into the collection room using collection room keys other than the ones that the 3 of us had. When Pete Corey was the curator in this area, he has left in the collection room. He left, I believe, last June. I'm not sure of that date. He had a policy, and that was that absolutely nothing was ever to leave that collection room unless a record was left in the collection room with him of what was taken. So whenever I took anything for display purposes, I had to leave him a note listing exactly what items I had taken, the catalog numbers of those items, the date that I had taken them, and where I was going to display them. For instance, a Bentwood box, catalog number so-and-so, taken on this date to be displayed in the Clinkett Community Room exhibit area on the first floor. I then had to put this note on Pete's desk for him. After quite a while, after Pete left, and after quite a while, it occurred to me that I was the only one who was following this policy. And when I recently asked the new curator, Rudy Luero, who came, I believe, last July, he said that this policy was no longer being followed. Sometimes I worked in the evenings in the basement, and I have seen a contract worker come into the basement after hours, which means that this particular contract worker had the use of a key to get into this general door to the basement. Since it was after hours, he presumably also had a key with which to get into the building. This is not necessarily so because the janitors could have let him in, or possibly the back door could have been left open. Because these artifacts are left in this area, it is very important for the main basement door to remain locked, and that's this door. During Mrs. Wallen's time, that basement door was always locked. Starting last summer, this door was left unlocked periodically, and more frequently as time went by. If it is unlocked, a stranger can walk in through the back door. This back door to the museum is left open during the day. A stranger could walk in and could walk in to the basement and into this area. Now, usually there are, of course, employees working in this area, and so a stranger coming in would be spotted right away. But there is not necessarily always somebody in that basement area. On 2 occasions, I have found this emergency door exit to the outside open in the morning, which presumably meant that this emergency exit had been left open all night. And I say presumably because on these occasions, I was the first one in the museum. The museum is located in an area where there are a great many children, from the Channel Apartments from the village across the street, and also there are a number of families who live in the Driftwood apartments who are looking for an apartment or permanent quarters to live in, and who have children in that area, and all of these children use the museum grounds as their playground, and they're constantly there. And if any of these kids had ever found this particular emergency door open and had come in here, there really could have been a great problem, because there is no lock on this door. They could have gone through the carpentry shop to this work area where the paints are kept, and there's shellacs there, varnishes, paints, spray paints, turpentine, paint remover, and removers. And it could have been a very serious and dangerous situation. This side entrance to the museum, an outside entrance, is to be locked by the last person leaving the museum. Theoretically, this is a good idea, but since the museum consists of three floors and people are working on all those floors, it is very hard for a person to know if he is indeed the last person leaving the museum. And therefore, this door is sometimes found open in the morning. And meaning, of course, that it was left open all night. The door leading up from this stairwell up to the main floor had to be locked all the time during Mrs. Wallen's time at the museum. But after she left, that door was left open more and more frequently until it is hardly ever left locked now at all. It's usually unlocked, with the result that if this door was left open, this outside door was left open at night, and somebody came in, it's very likely that he could also have gotten up to the first floor, to the exhibit area on the first floor, and could have gone on up the ramp to the upstairs exhibit area. The system of locks and everything in the museum might be considered an exaggerated security, but in effect it really is not, because especially in the summer, there are strangers, both young and old, found walking through all areas of the museum where obviously visitors are not meant to be. And so it's very important to keep doors locked. The main entrance on the main floor of the museum has six doors that are very tricky to lock. Sometimes it appears you have locked that door, but you haven't really. Sometimes you really do lock these doors, but they don't quite catch. The spring isn't strong enough to make the doors catch. So even if the door is locked, sometimes it is not caught, and you can still get in and out. I have found some of these doors open frequently when I have arrived in the morning through the upstairs entrance. One morning last summer, one Sunday morning, I went to the museum to do some work. I went in the left side door, which was the easiest one to unlock. And when I came back down, I heard some noise in the dark on the main floor, and here were two men who were rather drunk. They were banging away on the umiak, like a drum. And so I went over and asked them how they'd gotten in, and they said through the door. And I asked them to show me which door they had gotten in through. Oh, thank you, Dizzy. And they showed me the center door, and it was open. And of course, I asked them to leave and come back. The upstairs office doors, it's very important that these upstairs office doors especially be locked over the weekends, because on weekends, there is usually just one person in charge of the museum, or rather in the museum, one staff member. This is that weekend girl or evening girl. So there is no one upstairs, and of course the visitors do go upstairs to the natural history and history area. Thank you.
Everybody bringing you.
Yes, isn't that great? So this girl has to remain downstairs to answer the phone and to watch the area downstairs. She cannot see what's going on upstairs. This door has to be left open or cannot be locked. If any of these offices are open, a person can stay up there for quite a while and never be detected. protected. I think another security matter is the matter of safety against fire. There is a city ordinance that prohibits smoking in the museum. The fire marshal posted this ordinance in the museum some 3 years ago, and when I left, there were still three of these ordinances posted in the museum. That's last November. One was in the on the main floor as you entered the lobby. The other notice was in the basement in the carpentry shop, and the final notice was in the conference room upstairs. When Mr. Kennedy became director to the museum about a year and a half ago, he smoked in his office and in the conference room, although he had been told of this regulation. Shortly thereafter, other staff members also began smoking in those areas. After a while, periodically, people would smoke on the main floor. And just 3 weeks ago, I was in the basement on some business, and a staff member was smoking down there.
Thank you very much. If you want to wait just a second, are there any questions to any members of the committee?
Has there ever been a watchman system put in down there with stations? You know what a watchman is. He has a little time clock he carries over his shoulder, and every station has a key, and he inspects it at a certain hour of the day.
No.
He puts his key in his machine, and it runs on a tape, so it shows that that station was inspected.
Like on the ferries.
I imagine.
Yeah,
that.
No. There's no such
system. And there's no fire inspection.
Well, I can't tell you that.
And then the watchman would inspect for fire, and he'd inspect for locked doors, secure, certain prescribed.
There is no such watchman. The employees are
expected. Well, even an employee can do it. It's on the clock.
No, there is no such thing.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
As a result of this sort of objects missing there, do you know, has there been anything taken?
Not to my knowledge.
Mr. Chairman, you stated that you left the employment of the state in November of last year. Did you leave voluntarily?
Yes.
No other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sergeant.
We have Peggy Mulligan.
I may use the other glass of water.
Hi.
I'm Peggy Mulligan, and I was a volunteer with the museum for off and on a period of 2 years. And this was mostly at the time that Jane Wallen was there and Pete Corey. Very recently, or rather last fall, I worked for 1 week as a volunteer, but this was on the main floor, and it was more or less tidy. I would like to reiterate what Ree Munoz had said, and that I also was disturbed about security. At the time the volunteer system was put in, the volunteers really felt this was a great privilege to work in a museum and see these artifacts. And we were very impressed with the security that the staff implemented. When we worked in the basement, I don't have Ree's chart, but at least you came in down the basement, and you could get directly to the upstairs offices, and then you waited for someone to take you to the basement floors where all the artifacts are stored. You worked there with the direction, under the direction of someone, of some employee. Mostly I worked with Peter Corey. And then even if you, during this time the door was locked, and even if you, during a coffee break, if you were in the middle of some work, you did not remain, as a volunteer did not remain in this area unattended by a permanent worker. You went upstairs, and then when everyone was ready to work again, you returned to this locked area. When I also took a primitive arts course, which was given there in the evening by Peter Corey, and we occasionally would go down to the artifact room. And at this time, it was locked, and we would all individually sign into this room when we went in, and then remained there during this time with the instructor, and then we left. I was extremely impressed with the security and felt that it was comparable to other museums throughout the states that I have been in. When I was called to work last fall, I worked for a week, the morning period, so only in the first morning that I arrived, it was after most employees were there. I walked in the basement door, which is not unusual, and as I went up, I thought I would check to see if I could go right into the main floor, and I did so. I opened the door, which is unusual, and walked in, and there was no one there, no one at all. And I found this very surprising, and so I was very cheery about it when I went up, and oh, gee, you know, the door's unlocked. And I discovered this would seem to be very acceptable. And I really was disturbed because I felt that volunteer or not a volunteer, I could have walked down to the, opened the door in the basement, walked in, walked to the main floor, and walked out with anything, just gone back out to the door. And I think we have a beautiful museum, and I'm very proud of it. I am disturbed by other factors than security, but this really is the only thing that I can give you my first-hand knowledge about. But I would like to say that I have seen museum budgets in the past, and they have asked that the catalog cards be microfilmed. This is also very common practice in museums, and I think very wise, not only for fire, but just for keeping track of things. Many of the items are on loan to the governor's mansion, and I would like to recommend that the when you gentlemen in budget are looking over the museum budget, that you take into consideration the fact that we have a state computer that I feel, if, number one, I think these cards should be microfilmed and kept somewhere else, like in the state library or anywhere else. Both for the matter of security and for the matter of fire. And number two, I feel that it would be a very simple matter for this to be thrown into a state computer, and then you could tell what was at the governor's mansion. You could just throw these cards in and say, this is at the governor's mansion. I think that you feel like this might be kind of picky that talking about security, but I feel that all these things belong to the people of the state, and that they are very valuable and cannot be replaced, and that we can't take too good a care of them. That's about all I can say.
Mrs. Mulligan, when you walked in, the doors were unlocked, what date was that? Was this under Mr. Kennedy's administration?
Yes, this was last fall. I'm sorry, I can't tell you just what date. I just can't remember, but it was last fall. It was for just a period of a week, and then I didn't.
It had not been that way under Mrs. Wallen.
Oh, no. No, the security was very, and we appreciated the fact that there was security. We didn't mind the fact that we were escorted in and out of locked doors. We found this very, and even when I was taking the criminal arts course, we felt it was quite a privilege to be able to see these things, and we were very happy to abide by these very strict rules.
Questions?
Are these catalog cards in the museum key punch for machine operation?
No, they aren't. They're just very simple cards that have been there over a period of years, and they just tell you where you can find these. They are coded by whether they're an Eskimo or an Indian or what kind of an artifact they are. And then they're in drawers. They're in pull-outs.
But there's no square holes in them?
I'm sure there isn't. But I still feel that this, they could be microfilmed, that some system they could be recorded so that there is a, to the best of my knowledge, there is no duplication of those cards so that, for instance, if there was fire, you would have no way of knowing what was lost, what was destroyed. And they are, as Reese said, right outside is the paint and the turpentine and all this very volatile substances.
Do you know of any loss of any objects or equipment from the museum as a result of the lack of security?
No, I don't, but I would rather lock the door before the horse
was
stolen out of the barn.
That's a good idea. And as I understand it from you and from the previous witness, one could go through in the museum and go out via one of these fire exits without any problem at all right now.
I don't know if Senator knew about that. All I know is that when I went there, I was very impressed, badly impressed, I might say, with the difference between the security when I had worked there 2 years before. And all I know is about that one door and the fact that I walked up the stairs and walked right on to the main floor and couldn't walk right back out again.
Are those exits that were shown on the drawing, are they used by the general? visiting the museum and looking at the exhibits, they just go out one of those fire exits. There's no guards or security of that there of any kind.
No other questions, committee members. Thank you very much, Ms. Mulligan. Next witness is Walter Johns, Alaska Native Brotherhood.
I have here a resolution which will be sent to this committee if it was introduced last night at the Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp Number 2 meeting, late, just before we adjourned, so we didn't have time to get a type or anything. Introduced by Juneau Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood, Camp Number 2. Whereas to the native of Alaska, among his many valuables is his heritage, and whereas his history is directly related to the artifacts that he produces or has produced in the early years, and the fact that the artifacts tells a story, manifests a symbol of his tribe, or is used as an heirloom owned in common by his people, and whereas many of the artifacts were either endowed or loaned to the State Museum with the understanding that these artifacts are to be held in trust by the state, and that in case the museum should see no further use for it, for the item, it is to revert back to the owners, or the owners would have the first chance at buying it back. Whereas recently, the Alaska, the museum director exchanged some valuable artifacts of the Alaska Native for paintings. The artifacts included such items as the Tlingit crane hat, some Eskimo combs, and so forth. 18 items for 8 pictures. Be it resolved that the governor of Alaska, who is charged with the management of the State Museum pursuant to the section 44-19-023, be held accountable for exchanging irreplaceable artifacts of Alaska, and that he be requested to, 1, retrieve the exchanged Alaskan artifacts, 2, the Alaskan artifacts remain in Alaska, that authority to exchange any artifacts be revived by the governor, 4, that an inventory be taken of all Alaskan Native artifacts in possession by the State Museum immediately, and compared with the inventory submitted by the previous director. Be it further resolved, the Native Alaskans be made aware of the exchange procedures used by the State Museum, even though they had funds to funds to purchase the pictures, and that the Native Alaskans think twice about keeping their artifacts at the museum through endowment or loan. This is passed last night, April 2nd. It will be sent to the governor, the newspapers, Alaska Empire, the Anchorage Daily News, the Congressional Delegation of Alaska, Alaska Federation of Natives, and Alaska Native Brotherhood Grand Camp.
Mentioned in your resolution certain artifacts that were transferred out that were the property of ANS, Alaska Native, Alaska Native and Sisterhood of Juneau Camp Number 2. Do you have specific knowledge that those things have been transferred out, given away, or traded away?
This is why we've asked for an inventory, you know, when Mrs. Wallen was here, and since the director that is now in charge, you know, to compare them to see if there is a difference between the inventories. And I did not say that the Alaska Native Brotherhood had any artifacts, because as I mentioned a couple times in here, that it was through endowment or loan. And I don't know who the owners were of the artifacts, but I did mention the crane hat.
You do have specific knowledge that the crane hat has been traded away?
Well, like I said, this I don't personally, but we got this information through the grapevine, I guess. But regardless of where we got this information, we want to make sure that the Alaska Museum does not trade any of the native artifacts to the lower 48 for pictures that could be bought with money.
You claimed with Mr. Eli Reyes?
Yes, I know who he is.
And were you acquainted with the fact that he delivered a crest, Tlingit crest helmet to the museum, which has now disappeared? Do you know that situation?
No, I haven't heard anything about that. Let's see, this is...
You have here RCP and A. What does that mean?
What's that?
A and B. You have Walter Johns, RCP, A
and B. Oh, Representative Alessin is brother at camp number two.
I see. All right. Well, thank you very much. That's all the names I have. Is there anyone else that would like to speak?
My name's Eli Reyes, and I have here a receipt from museum which my family loaned 3 crest hats and 1 wand for a dancing stick. This was loaned to museum by my brother on July 5th, 1968, and the main purpose was for safekeeping. We felt that it was perfectly safe in the museum. And then in February 1973, the family wanted to use the ceremonial hats for a fashion show, a Tlingit Haida, or an Indian fashion show. And when I went down to borrow them back, I was told that one was missing. And I approached the director and I asked him, well, what can we do about this? And I was not entirely happy with what he had to say. After listening to previous testimony, I could very well see that almost anything could have happened to that hat, but I am interested and my family is interested in obtaining the hat back. One way or the other, we're not interested in money. And what he offered, the center director offered to replace the hat, but you know, you can't replace anything that's been in the family for a number of years.
Maybe some questions.
How did he intend to, replace it? I don't understand that.
Well, he said that he would have a replica made. But when I asked him if there's anything I should do, you know, like I think it's either a theft or something. Done, you know, there's something going on, it's just not there. And I asked him if it would be a good idea to go to the police department or anything like that. He kind of shied away from that. But, I still have not told my mother about this because I'm kind of afraid to.
You weren't given an explanation then as to what had happened to it, where it had gone? You don't know?
He just said it's gone. That's about the size of it. So he said he couldn't explain it.
Senator, asked the question I was going to ask is whether or not he did get an explanation of what had happened.
Any other questions?
How long ago was this that you went there and asked for that?
Well, this was, I don't know exactly, but it was sometime in February.
This year?
This year.
And when had you last seen it prior to that?
Well, last time I saw it was something in 1954, but my brother turned it into the museum for safekeeping, because he had 5 little kids, you know, in the house, and he didn't want them laying around.
And do you have the receipt for the equipment that was delivered to her, that was delivered to the family?
Yes, I do.
Pastor Allen, were the other objects that were delivered on that occasion there, or did you get those back?
Yes, we got back 2 of the hats and the dancing stick.
Have you since left any of those as a museum?
No, sir.
Where do you live, Mr. Reyes?
I live in Juneau, Mendenhaven.
How do you spell your last name?
R-E-Y-E-S.
Where can you be contacted?
I have a home phone, or else my office. Home phone is 99818.
Where's your office?
In the federal building, room 223. My number is 67133.
whether the hat was, the helmet was missing, just missing, or whether it was sold or traded, or do you know it all?
I do not know.
When did you discover this, Mr. Reeves?
In February.
This year?
Yes.
A short while ago. And you suggested turning it over to the police?
Right.
And that was a suggestion was not acted on, as far as you know.
Not that I know of.
You haven't done it yourself?
No.
How do you spell your last name?
H-A-M-E-Y.
All right.
I have two incidents to relate about security at the museum. One, last spring, happened when Mr. Kennedy left the museum in charge of the janitor, who was a Filipino man. He does not work for the museum. He works for the Division of Buildings. And he does not hardly speak English. He left man in charge for about an hour. Mr. Kennedy opened up the museum and told this man he was in charge. And the man was upset about it. But I was later told by Mr. Kennedy that he's been there all that time. And I knew that he wasn't, because Raymond Yost, who was leaving right when this happened, was told by the janitor what had happened. And she had looked for Kennedy, if he was not in the building. I'm sorry, my voice is terrible. The second incident is sometimes museums get paintings on approval. They have their paintings sent so that they can decide whether they want to buy the painting. And I know of one instance when a painting that was received on approval was hung in the gallery and was not purchased with no extra security measures for the painting.
What was your job there, Adele?
Clerk typist three.
Clerk typist.
Adele, I'm talking about this incident when the janitor was left in charge. Was there a tour coming in, or were there people coming in?
West tourists had called Mr. Kennedy direct and asked him to open up. We were going to be open 7 to 10 that night anyway. They asked him to open up, I believe, at 6 o'clock. And he said he would. He didn't ask any of the staff to take this. He said he would. And apparently he came at 6 and said to Carl, the janitor, he had more important things to do and left. Said, "You're in charge."
Well, did the tour then come in, or do you know?
Ree, who was leaving at that time, saw two people get off the bus in.
Thank you.
To your knowledge, has anything been lost from the museum, either through theft or misplacement?
Well, when I worked there one summer, there was a theft.
How long ago was
that? That was the summer before last.
In the summer of 71?
Yeah, and that was...
And what was stolen?
A tray of little ivory pieces and a dancing wand. And everything was recovered by the state troopers except, I believe, two little ivory pieces.
Thank you. Yes, that's all. Thank you very much. Ed, your next.
Chairman, member of the committee. I'm Edward E. Sands, and I represent, am president and, of the Friends of the Museum organization locally here in Juneau with members in other parts of the state. I have written up a short summary of a meeting which the Friends had recently as a result of the concern which has come up in the publicity, which I believe probably reflects the feeling of the Friends of the Museum, who are, of course, what the name implies. We try to be a friend to it. As a result of certain adverse publicity in regards to the operation of the Alaska State Museum, the Executive Board of the Friends of the Museum held a meeting on Saturday, March 31st, to discuss the effect of this publicity has on the safeguarding of those items representative of Alaskan culture, which are the responsibility of, by law, of our government. Although the Friends of the Museum has no official capacity, it represents approximately 200 interested citizens in the city and borough of Juneau, as well as from other areas. Since the major collection of items in custody of the state are located in the museum, now located in Juneau, the members have a more direct interest in proper administration and development of these than would be normal. For those who are concerned over this important phase of good social development, this probably has greater significance than is warranted under modern pressures or development in other fields. However, we must not forget that our future is not entirely unrelated to the culture and arts, both past, present, and future. If I may try to speak for the Board of Directors, as usual, not in complete concurrence, I would say that our concern is not related to details, but toward more concern and directed toward the improvement and better management of our Alaska State Museum system. This not directed in criticism of the director or the governor's office, who has jurisdiction therefore, but the publicity referred to indicates that the public is concerned that our heritage is properly administered. Those of us in the Friends who have more than a casual interest in the arts and artifacts of the state realize that due to a lack of effort on the part of our state administration, many vital and necessary collections of Alaskiana have passed into the hands of private collectors and other governmental bodies. It has been the aim of the Friends to attempt to prevent important items being lost to the people of Alaska. In some small respect, we have been successful, but if this is to be of any help, the donors of such items must have confidence that we really want these as a part of our heritage. Action was taken at the above-referenced meeting to document the feelings of the board by a letter to the governor with copies to the director of the museum outlining the following items which I have listed. This letter, I did not have access to the details of our secretary's report, and it would be in greater detail, but in general it is a listing of items which we feel can possibly be of assistance in improving the general program and overcome the possibilities of such things as we're hearing on now. One, preparation and documentation of a complete inventory of items in the ownership of the state, together with a planned program of acquisition to complete and supplement the present collection. A security program to assure that these items are preserved properly and safe from mishandling, theft, and other means of deterioration of the collection, present, or future. Three, an orderly and intensive program to display properly representative items to the public, both statewide and for the tourists. A selective and adequate development of staff to properly protect, display, and evaluate the items in the collection. The bonding, the possible bonding of all personnel within the museum organization responsible for the safekeeping of the property, and certain directives issued as to their responsibility. The establishment by the governor's office of certain policies regarding the safekeeping and enlargement of the collection in the jurisdiction of the Alaska State Museum system. This is not presented as a request for this, but as a suggestion. The executive board appears to favor the foundation of an appointed board of directors to give some control and direction to the director of museums in order to eliminate personal criticism for actions taken in regard to selling of or obtaining items from or adding to the collection. In conclusion, the above items are in general and do not intend to be in detail the opinions of the board, but one general statement is evident. That is that for the safekeeping and growing development of the Alaska State Museum, a continuing control of the administrative policy should be maintained. Adequate financing should be given and every effort exerted to develop preservation of our culture, both past and present, be of prime interest to the administration and its elected representatives. There are other members of the Friends of the Museum here. I'm sorry, Chairman, this is not direct testimony, but I tried to get through it as fast as I could. And we have always tried to support the improvement of the museum, and we don't like to have publicity get out to the effect that has been in the past here recently. I thank you.
But still, Ed, there may be some questions. In fact, I think there will be.
Would you supply your written testimony to the chair?
I have already
wrote that. Thank
you. As a Friends of the Museum, you don't have any statutory standing. You're just an informal
organization. I think I explained that. We're strictly unofficial. We are a non-profit, self-organized body for our do what we can for it.
Do you think that the laws of Alaska ought to be changed so that there is a statutory body who has charge of policies involving accession, involving security, involving trade, involving disposal of the item?
I don't believe I would be prepared to say that I believe this is the proper thing. It has, of course, it is somewhat usual that museums and holders of artifacts and things are controlled by some type of a board. This isn't the always the answer. This is discussed quite a bit, and I think that it should be pursued, the idea of it.
Does your group have any, is there any group that passes on an issue such as occurred in the Richardson trades where certain artifacts were traded for Richardson paintings, or is that just done by the director as it presently stands?
The mechanics of that operation, I don't believe I can do. Our position in things like this, which we haven't discussed, is informal discussion with the director and various items by individuals of our organization. We would not, as an organization, have anything to say officially about this or not. Now, whether there's anything within the administrative routine of this type of thing that would know that this was going on, I couldn't answer.
So right now, you don't have any power at all over the director
no,
except to make suggestions?
No, that's right. No, this, I don't want to imply this. It's a local group. We have no jurisdiction over anyone except their own conscience.
And have the Friends of the Museum been advised that in this trade for the Richardson there were certain loaned items that were exchanged for the
I personally, there are other members here of the executive more that might have more direct interest, have had more direct to do with that or not. I think that some knowledge of the possible trade was discussed, but the details of items within this trade, to my knowledge, have never come to the direct attention of the plan.
For example, does your group get into the question of policies of accession, as to which objects should be acquired?
Officially, we try not to, because we can't.
And do you get into the issues of security in any way?
Not officially, we can't do that. Security is a concern of anyone that has been around museums or anything. It's a frightening sort of thing, because there's considerable wealth and heritage, as well as nowadays money value involved in it.
I have no questions.
Did your group ever get any communications from the director of the museum indicating policy decisions, actions it intends to take, requests for suggestions, informal or formal? Do you simply get any direct communications of that kind or anything related to that?
This has not been a normal practice, no. If it is, it's strictly informal conversation.
Hey, Ed, will you tell me again? I note that you're president of the Friends of the Museum, and you speak to the board of directors. What do you do? Why are you organized, and what do you do when you meet? I'd like to know a little more about you.
Well, actually, I don't have the bylaws of Friends of the Museum. As I say, as it says, it's supposed to be a friend of the museum, and it's particularly pointed to a couple of things. Number one is, and that's why we're interested in this hearing, is that we, one of the aims is to locate and obtain private pieces of artifacts and paintings and things that might be of value to the museum and get it into the archives. The other thing is that we do like to sponsor the arts in general as far and have at least one show a year of a nature that we feel would be worthwhile to the public. But
we have limited resources here. State, as you're well aware, and many of us here on the Finance Committee. And there actually, as I see this thing, two sides to the museum operation. Part of it, I'm looking under the responsibilities of somebody here, a curator. His responsibilities are trips to Anchorage, Costa Dew, Fairbanks, to gather interviews for a Humanities Forum videotape program concerning man and the land. Tape includes interviews with man on the streets, executives, regional native corporations, NANA, Tenenbaum chiefs and other things. And then I see over here that the situation, and speaking of the security, David Cottrell said that the control exercised by the museum to safeguard its collection are not sufficient to enable us to express a conclusion or opinion. This was in 71, and again in 73, we are still unable to express a conclusion or opinion as to whether all collection items acquired by the museum have been accounted for. So then someone writes and says the situation can be rectified only by completely cataloging, accessioning, and inventorying the collection, followed by a complete audit of the card catalogs, accessions, and accessions book, and so forth. Now, of the two operations of this museum, I'm assuming you're more interested in these cataloging and the controlling of these artifacts. Is that right? Is that what your prime interest is in? Kind of asking a leading question, but don't mean to be.
I think that this cataloging and doing it is a mechanical thing in a museum, which probably never is completely accomplished. But it's a continuing thing, which for the proper control of the artifacts is almost a must. In other words, anything you've got to have, it's like a filing system in an office. If something doesn't show up and you don't have a card on it and you don't know what it is, you have no way of even looking for it, things like that. It's only a mechanical. No, I wouldn't say that the mechanics of indexing all those items is the important factor of the operation.
It
costs a lot of money in the first place.
Mr. Sands, are there any other organizations or groups in the community that are museum-oriented other than Friends of the Museum that you're speaking of? Is yours the only
Fred, I don't believe there is any organized. There's an awful lot of individuals in Juneau that are interested in this phase, but as an organization, I believe we're the only one. I hesitated because I don't know whether the Arts and Crafts Board can be. What? I was going to say the Centennial Organization, and I presume possibly you could say maybe the Arts and Crafts Board is museum-oriented, is it or not?
My next question.
The Centennial, of course, committee is responsible for our museum, and they are probably more interested than many of the rest of it.
My next question would be, does the, and I'm sure this, we tried to answer this question, but does the director of the museum ever contact or solicit or ask or for advice or help or direction? Does he ever call upon the organization anyway, or is it the other way around?
No, the director has at times, has asked for our help, and sometimes we have given it when it comes to a matter of, sometimes when it means financing, we don't have the financing, and we have to say we can't do it. But we have received some requests, not a great many of them, and we in turn ask for space and things like that down there at the museum and have received.
I understand him asking for your help. What I was interested in, does he ever ask for your advice?
I don't think. When you answer a question like that, it's a very difficult one to answer, because when you give advice, you know, I'm used to getting paid for it. And it's informal advice. I think the person has to think of, when a person asks for your advice, as to whether it's really an official request. And this was the point I'd make, and it seems like there should be some control over particular things other than just informal. If he comes to me and he says, do you think I should trade that for that? Well, really, I have to almost say I'm not qualified and I don't know your policy. I don't think you should, but...
Being part of the Friends of the Museum, have you ever observed the Pullen Collection in Seattle? Or do you have any knowledge of it?
I have knowledge of it. I have no first-hand knowledge. I wouldn't. Don't ask me what pieces are in it.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You'd recommend us purchasing it.
Mr. Chairman, as a parting shot for me on the way out, is there any place in the museum to display the Pullen Collection at the present time, even if it were acquired?
I would much prefer you. They, of course, in support of, although I, one of the things we've been wanting is more and more display of our local things, display space at the museum is limited. Fact of the matter is, I believe the museum is probably getting a little too small for our collection and activities, probably. So I'm not sure there would be space.
Wait a minute before you leave. Do you think we should limit the increase of the accumulation of artifacts and our heritage just because of the size of the museum?
No, I don't. No, I think every effort should be made. I think that anyone that is interested in the heritage of our country should always be aiming towards getting some of the stuff back that we've lost rather than saying we have a space for it.
One additional question. Do you feel that if a collection of great value were to come available for purchase and you did not necessarily have the room currently, should you not purchase that collection in anticipation of creating additional room for the same?
I think there should be I think that these things, when they come up, should have somebody knowledgeable in the whole field that can make the real decision on it. That's what I mean, is it is a problem. And sometimes it's a money problem. The mechanics of taking care of those things when you do get them, if you don't have it, is really, this is where the museum director is more experienced at it than a layman is.
It's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that most frequently these collections come up for sale and you either buy them at the moment or they're gone forever. Is that your understanding?
This has been basic historical facts on Dale. I think that there has been occasions when you have been able to go back and get them at an increased value.
Chairman, these almost seem like leading questions. Do you get to that end?
Thank you. For your benefit.
Well, thank you very much.
I didn't mean to be
questioned
as much as I did. I wanted to make this short because it isn't direct testimony on what you have
Very
been.
Good. Thank you very much, Mr. Sands. Mr. Dunn?
Mr. Chairman, my name is William T. Dunn. I'm just a plain, ordinary citizen of our little community here. I don't belong to the Friends of the Museum, although I am a friend of the museum. In fact, I've been a friend of the museum, and a very enthusiastic one, since watching the long and uphill and sometimes very lonely struggle that Millie Banfield put on over a period of several years to bring us the museum. I'd like to take this opportunity to throw a well-deserved bouquet to Representative Banfield, because if it weren't for her, my own frank opinion is we would not still have a museum. However, this museum of ours, in my considered judgment, has become one of the finest cultural, educational, entertainment, and delightfully warm and friendly institutions in our community. A museum is not a mausoleum. Although a lot of museums that I've been in, and I have been in a few here, there, and yonder throughout the United States, are operated on that basis. Our wonderful little Juno Museum has been just the exact opposite almost from the day it opened. This became quite pronounced when Jane Wallen was made the director. She opened the museum up. It was made a warm and friendly place. It was open to practically any organization in Juneau that had any kind of a civic operation underway. That was the whole tone and tenor and atmosphere of the museum during Jane Wallen's tenure there. And it was just outstanding. When Jane Wallen left, just as a plain citizen, I felt a sense of loss because I thought, I wonder what happens now. What kind of a director do we get? Because the director sets the tone. I had not met Mr. Michael Kennedy before his arrival in Juneau. I knew nothing whatever about him, except that he worked or lived in Anchorage, which did not prejudice me against him in any way, shape, or form, because I like Anchorage, too, very much. However, Mr. Kennedy, on coming here, not only continued Jane Wallen's, what I think, outstanding administration of the museum, but actually expanded it. That museum today is the same warm and friendly place it's been practically from the day it opened. It's open to any organization in Juneau, and myself, my wife, and son have spent absolutely countless evenings there with great enjoyment. Now, I am not a member of any group, pro or con the present administration, pro and con the present administration of the museum. I have no knowledge, personal, of any of the concerns that have been expressed here this morning. I would not quarrel with them for a moment. I, too, as a normal citizen, feel that security is a real problem in any place where you have values of any kind. My whole background is in a place where you have values of quite a number of kinds. I'm also I also have a deathly fear of fire in that beautiful museum, and so I worry about that just as any normal, reasonable citizen. As to that phase, all I can say there, and again, I'm not taking any sides, nor am I challenging the concern of these very fine folks. Every one of them that testified here this morning is an old friend of mine. I do say this only, that any human institution can be improved, no question. Our museum can be improved. Our city government can be improved. Our state legislature can be improved. In other words, we are all human and subject to improvement. For every credit my good friends over in legislative audit, where I spent 4.5 very happy years, will appreciate this. For every debit, there is a credit. For every credit, there is a debit. It would be quite possible to close that museum up tight, put double locks on all the doors, enforce an FBI investigation before anyone was allowed in the place, and you would make, truly, a bank vault or a mausoleum. The other side of the coin is the way it is now. I don't know that it's wide open. Possibly it is a little bit more accessible than it should be. But on the pro side, I'd like to reiterate again and again that our museum is really a marvelous thing in this community. And I have never, in my experience of going to museums here, there, and yonder, I have never encountered one where the atmosphere was warmer or where it was easier to get an evening. And as I say, I would just like to say that much on the pro side of this whole thing, that my earlier misgivings have been completely eradicated. I think Mr. Kennedy has been doing an outstanding job in public relations and in community service. And if he needs to tighten up the fire guard a little bit and the door lock situation a little bit, so be it. Thank you very much.
Just a second, Bill.
You bet.
Representative Freeman.
Just as a matter of curiosity, I noticed you referring on several occasions to Juno's Museum. Is that the way you really look at that Juno's Museum?
No, I remember the history of it very well. It's a state museum. But it's the museum in Juneau. No, I'm not chauvinistic at all. I like the people in Anchorage. I like the people in Fairbanks. I like the people in the Nilchik. I like the people. No, I have no, because frankly, one of the things, now that you bring up the subject, I'll say something on that. When I came up here from San Francisco in 1951, I was amazed by the utter and complete closed-mind provincialism that I found in Alaska. Every community was a self-contained entity and so forth. That is going. Slowly in some areas, but it is going. But I certainly wouldn't contribute to it in any way, shape, or form, Mr. Freeman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Any other witnesses? Anyone else would like to speak? It's a man.
Yeah.
In the Palmer's area.
How do you like that category?
My name is Yul Kilcher from Homer. I happen to be in town on one of my rare occasions, rarer the last few years than it used to be. I have seen many museums in my time. Last winter I was at the British Museum where they had the Tutankhamun exhibit, valued at about $50 million. There was a security guard every 10 feet, some of them armed to the teeth. I don't think we can afford that here. But I was at the museum last night. I had a showing there in connection with the Humanities Forum, and the night before, I was in the museum for the first time 2 years ago, I think. And it is a lovely place. Listening to this testimony this morning, it sounds to me a little bit like a typical Alaskan March blues, some of the complaints, I think, that always brings up this time of year. In effect, I think, however, the sum total of the testimony seems to indicate that the architecture could be, it's an architectural problem to quite an extent. The museum in Anchorage does not have some of these door problems, you know. And on the other hand, as to fire escapes that are open, that's a favorite gambit of thieves, to use fire escapes. If something should be stolen, it can be stolen any place, even in the British Museum, I think. So it's a lovely museum, and I enjoyed my stay in it last night.
Thank you. Thank you. Bill. Any other, sir?
My name is Arthur Higgins. I would just like to make a couple of brief comments. One, I would like to concur with Mr. Dunn on his...
Arthur Higgins?
H-I-G-G-I-N-S. I'd like to concur with Mr. Dunn on his comments on the positive aspects of the Alaska State Museum. I had exactly the same feelings he did when the directorship changed a few years back, and I'm very happy to see that it has indeed expanded. I am an artist here in town, and I've had brief on-and-on contacts with the museum. Recently, I had a one-man show at the museum. I was down there framing and matting and getting ready for my show due to the courtesy of the curator of exhibits there, who allowed me to use the facilities in the basement for getting ready for the show. Now, this happens to be in the same area as the collections room. I've been with this, seen the museum over and over, had a lot of contact with it down in the basement. I know the people that work there. And I have seen the changes in security from one directorship to another. Indeed, in fact, there has been a certain amount of laxity, as it were, a loosening up in the security, especially in the basement area. However, the collections room, I was standing there for three solid days, 8 hours a day, getting matting this show, and not once was that collection room left open. Now, this is where most of the museum possessions are, except for those that are displayed up on the upper floor. So the actual museum collections are always under lock and key. The access into this basement area was open, and this is one of the most notable changes. Now, this all occurred the week before my show, which is the 1st of March. Now, when the show came down on the 15th, and I went down there to take my paintings back, I noticed a remarkable change. Evidently, something had been going on. All of a sudden, all the doors were locked. The smoking, et cetera, that had been going on before had stopped. And the security was as I remembered it from 3 years ago. So it puzzles me what the reason for some of these comments now and the timing of these comments, because yes, there was a loosening of the security, but there have been some changes within the last couple of weeks, and now it's tightened up again. The man that spoke just before here made a very good point. The security of that museum is an architectural problem, if nothing else. It's very difficult to keep that place 100% secure unless you do have an armed guard 24 hours a day, which the museum obviously cannot afford. There are two kinds, I'm sure you're well aware of this, there are two kinds of thieves. There are spontaneous thieves, and there are professional thieves. Now, the locked doors, the checklist, a few keys in a certain hands of the museum staff, this essentially prevents spontaneous theft. And I say right now that I have seen that the spontaneous theft prevention is now up to standard as it was a couple of years ago, and I think that's being taken care of. If somebody wanted to go into that museum and rob it or burglarize it, they would have very little trouble in doing that. And there's not enough not locked doors to stop that. That is another matter altogether. You can't really stop a professional thief. I guess that's about all I would like to add. I'm just a few comments.
Any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Higgins.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public sector? If not, we have. Yes.
I came in a bit late.
Why don't you just step up here and sit down, state your name for the tape recorder, and say your say.
Thank you. My name is Len Sevdy, and I work with the Indian Studies Program.
How do you spell the last name?
S-E-V-D-Y. And I don't really have much orientation about the goals and objectives of this meeting, but very briefly, I've been working closely with Dan Monroe since September, planning how we might share the museum with the school children. And we've worked out a rather exciting schedule where children come into the museum, and we show a short movie about the cultural background of the area, and then we have little pamphlets, which we call a cultural treasure hunt. And the general lesson plan is to take children through the museum under close supervision, identifying the really beautiful and exciting things they have there. We tried to change it from a quick visit and a quick walkthrough to a situation where children actually study the artifacts and write and respond to questions. And we planned this since September, and it's my understanding that none of the children have defaced any of the artifacts or that we've had a real problem. We have been moving children through the museum, and it's making an exciting impact on children. And if you'd have any questions about that, I'd be glad to respond to those. Basically, we discuss safety and so forth. We ask the children not to run. And, you know, we haven't had one report of a problem. Might be a little congested with children, but it's for about a two-hour block of time in the morning, 5 days a week, every third week. And basically, I'd say it's an exciting museum, and the community is really something special to have that kind of a resource here. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Not Mr. Kennedy, would you like to say anything today, reply to any of this?
Well, I would.
I'd like to have you come up here, if you will.
My name is Michael Kennedy. I'm director of the State Museum. I might tell this committee beforehand that I don't beat my wife. It was interesting to learn that all the good things that have happened to the museum happened under my predecessor. But I guess maybe that's the difference of two philosophies. Personally, I respect Jane Wallen, and I think she did an excellent job while she was here. But just specifically to set the record straight on a few matters, first off, I would like to reiterate that I did appear with my staff before this committee, that you asked us some rather pertinent questions. We provided you, we think, with honest answers. In our testimony, we were in error on a few points. We corrected those in our written statements after going back to our offices and checking our records. But I would like to make a few specific points from the testimony, particularly that was given earlier here. Smoking, for instance, was mentioned, and it is true that personally I believe that a museum is not a mausoleum. I believe absolutely in safety, but I am a smoker myself. We have checked with the fire marshal. We find that it's perfectly permissible to smoke, even in the main area of the museum. We're not going to allow smoking there. So there's two differences of opinion there. Apparently there are two different fire marshals. The microfilming of the collections record is a splendid idea, and it's one that we've advocated for some time. We're also concerned with having duplicate copies, some of them away. But I would remind this group that the most important thing, of course, is the protection of the objects themselves. Even if a Holocaust occurs, I would feel much more concerned with losing the objects than losing the records of them. This business, again, of the collections records is a long-standing one. I think we reviewed that quite carefully. And the auditors, it comes back to this basic fact that the records of the museum, as good as the collection itself is, have never been a constant with that. And my predecessors, as well as myself, since the move into the new building, have made every effort to catch up. But you don't catch up on a 60-year job or one where there were no records whatsoever in 2 or 3 years. And I believe the statement that Mr. Luera made in reply to the audit is incorporated in the written course, are necessary by law. We would prefer from a security standpoint that we didn't have them. But I would remind everyone in this room what a terrible thing it would be if a fire did occur in there and people were needlessly lost because of blocking a fire exhibit. We've actually seriously considered this.